Hello and welcome to another episode of SBCC Vaquero Voices, a podcast highlighting the unique voices that comprise our campus culture and how we're all working together to serve our students and the community at large. As usual, I'm joined by co-host Akil Hill.
What's good, y'all?
And today we are honored to welcome Jesse Felix to the show. Welcome, Jesse.
Welcome, Jesse.
Oh, thanks, guys. It's so cool to finally be in the space with y'all.
It's an honor to have you. Our last
Absolutely.
episode was our first SBCC alum, and you are our first unofficial SBCC exit interview because while you are
Yes.
currently working in the purchasing department, you are also on your way out of Santa Barbara. Is that correct?
That's right. And there's no person I would rather have my exit interview with than y'all.
Now, it's not going to be nothing formal like that. We're not going to ask, but at the same time, if you want to just touch on the purchasing department for a little bit and all they do here at SBCC. I know y'all are constantly busy and your fiscal year is wrapping up now. But in terms of the idea of purchasing, I mean, are we talking everything the college buys? I mean, each department, everything that the college has purchased runs through y'all at some point, or is do y'all only handle the big ticket items, or what's the purview of your department and what y'all do at the college?
Well, thanks for asking, and thanks for the understanding that this is our busy time of year. I think that's one thing that we just don't know enough about in each other's worlds, and like would be so great if we really could like job shadow or better understand what you and I do, because like when the school year kicks off, everybody's like, "Oh man, it's crazy," and I'm like, "It's cool." Like my job isn't like necessarily as impacted, but I'm aware of it. All of a sudden there's all these students on campus and like everybody's kind of stressed out and stuff. But on my end, it's like everybody's kicking it. It's June. And I was like, like I gotta get everything done. I've got like how many board items going to the board? And then like these people who haven't had anything and like we told them months ago that we need to get this stuff are suddenly like, oh, it's gotta happen right now. So I think appreciation of what everybody does is super important and something that I've been waving that job shadowing banner in a lot of different places over a lot of different time. It's really helpful for me. Like I can do my job better if I understand what the people on either side of me need. Like if I can do this a little bit differently and the accounting folks makes their job easier, then why don't I learn how they do what they do? Or if people can better understand like where why we require our forms or these different thresholds and things like that, if they can understand a little bit better, if I can show them a little bit more clearly why we need these things, then they can do that better. It makes it more seamless. And so yeah, we cover a lot of the purchasing, but really like what purchasing does, I think the big misconception there is like we're just shopping or something, but what we do is we illustrate how the resources of the college are spent. So when it comes time to say like, why did we buy this, or audits, or just things like that, we can demonstrate the whole path to procurement. Like this is a request over here. It goes through these different stages, and then it finally gets purchased, and then it comes, and then it's received, and then it's put into action, and then the invoice is paid. Like illustrating that whole process is kind of what I do.
And when you talk about illustrating that picture, I mean, that's a lot of work. And y'all are a pretty small team, right? It's you, Mark, and Rui, and that's the entire department, or are there more folks
That's
that.
the office. So we have the purchasing and central receiving. The central
Yes.
receiving element has got Mike and David and Mariel and our warehouse crew. But yeah, the bumpy aspect that I say is Rui came on with Santa Barbara City College about 5 years ago and didn't have a buyer. It's like a purchasing department with no purchaser. And it was like, wow. Scratching her head, and it's like, what am I going to do? And then I got my second involuntary transfer, and suddenly I'm an admin assistant in the purchasing department. And it's like, but we need a buyer. So, it became a team, and I definitely credit Rui to her team vision, her team orientation, and her great strategic and conscientious onboarding. Onboarding is not a bad word, contrary to popular belief. It seems like a lot of folks just kind of get thrown into it, including Rui. But what she has done in building the team that I've been a part of and enjoy being a part of has been really conscientious in the team building, in the onboarding, and gave me the tools to succeed in my role, even as my role was outside of other duties as assigned. And yeah, so it's small but mighty. We just recently We're able to get a buyer position. So now we have a buyer in the buying department, which is great. That's our newest teammate, Mark Zaletsi. And he was previously a buyer on campus. So he's now able to be a buyer in the purchasing department, which is just super helpful and probably super duper helpful in that, like what you said before. Now I'm exiting away. Who knows what the future will bring with staffing challenges, across the campus, et cetera. But yeah, that's a little bit of the bumps along our road.
I like the idea what you have alluded to about basically job shadowing. It's like kind of like cross-pollinating, and I think about making our institution more effective that way. I'm glad that you hit on that because in so many ways, like we're creating more work by not really being intentional about cross-pollinating with other departments that you work directly with. And so I really appreciate you for making that comment because that's something I think we can improve on as an institution.
I think that we're really poised to take advantage of that in a lot of ways, and not even just the direct relationships. When I ran the bowling league for all those years, like the connections that I made with bowling, I don't have a lot of interaction with Dean Nevins, but I bowled with him. I know him that much better. And every interaction that we do have is kind of like those wheels have already been greased. Like I already know what he's about. Like we like the same kind of, things. And like, so it's interesting, like the ways that it doesn't even necessarily have to be, I want to know how to be more efficient in doing my job by understanding like what you need or having you understand what I need, but rather, just like, hey, maybe admin assistance, like, hey, how do you do what you do? I'm in a different department. I have different people, different pressures. What are your best practices? Learning like things like that. Or as the pandemic illustrated, some people in their positions and their departments with their supervisors are able to be in a flexible work environment where, maybe they can flex their hours because they've got kids in school and they need to be able to flex those hours, or maybe they're in a position where they can work remote. And so those things, while they're really good and it allowed us to weather the storm of the pandemic, they're also could have chance created sort of feelings of or actual iniquities, like where my boss says I can't be remote, your boss says you can. And so sometimes those job shadowing could actually lead to things that, from my perspective, it's really that relationship piece, like connections, understanding how things interconnect and better be able to do what we do. But also it could be like, you've got the same role and I've got this role, and I think that what I really want to do is transfer out of this department into this one. Like it'll help us to not only retain people, but it even could even like attract new people. We had talked a little bit about my purchasing processes and stuff and how they've changed. Part of that has been because we've had a rotating door on the VP of BS. And it's like right now we're still with an interim person in there. And that's been great. We've done a lot of good work. But every time that that position changes, maybe priorities change or processes change, thresholds change. And then somebody who we've trained on how to work with our department in years past suddenly comes up and they're finding new things. And it's like, wait a minute, am I crazy or did you guys change this? And it's been a challenge. So the consistency piece, I think, would really be helpful too. But honestly, I think it's like as simple as going bowling with somebody. It doesn't have to be that. It could be sitting down with them and watching how they do their job for an hour, or them sitting with you and watching how you do your job for an hour. And you just like feel more connected with the person. It's like, hey, this is a real person. It's not just a name on a screen or something like that.
And it's a complaint you hear about at a lot of organizations at larger scale in terms of I heard it when I was at the city, when I was working in private sector and video games. It's that folks in departments are too siloed. You hear that term a lot, siloed. And that's one thing that in terms of people get kind of locked into what they do, or they're so busy that they don't have really the time or to reach out and go beyond what they're doing in their own job duties or within their department. And so that's where these silos kind of start up. So it is kind of what Akhil's saying. You have to be intentional about going around that, about getting around the idea of being siloed. And to your point, Jesse, it doesn't have to be a full-on shadow because someone could say, oh, I'm too busy to just see what someone else is doing for an hour. I don't even have an hour in my day. I eat lunch at my desk, But if you talk about it in another term, like you say with the bowling, we've worked together on the coffee and conversations with Kirsten and Christina Garcia Otero and Becky Saffold. We've worked to do those kind of events to bring people together outside of their own department, interacting with other departments and just getting to know people. I mean, that does do a lot to help that kind of silo kind of situation. And I also want to shout out my office, Kirsten, and my supervisor, Jordan. They started a meeting, getting some of the executive assistants to meet together to discuss some things as well. And like you said, just having those kind of conversations where folks can have can bring in their individual perspectives from their departments about a unified topic that they're all working on together. I mean, all these things combine to kind of help with those kind of situations. So, but it's good for you to raise that as a concern for sure.
Oh, I am your silo buster. I love busting down those silos. I mean, in my previous position here, when I was in special events, it was astonishing. We were getting ready to launch 25 Live. We had been interviewing all these different companies that were offering their scheduling solution, and somebody else in a different department had no idea that we were doing this, and they were trying to recreate. They were trying to do the same thing. Like, talk about inefficiencies or double work. That happens on small and on large scales all the time because we don't know what one another is doing. And some of that's a product of the size of the system, but other parts are because we're siloed and we don't have enough of that connection. So, I mean, the community of community college is super duper important, whether it's just getting together. And I've had a number of people have said, like, wow, I remember you from the first day when I started and you were so welcoming and we had that coffee event or whatever, and things along those lines. Like, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal to me. It's like, show up with coffee and donuts and, like, good time, everybody, and just like shake hands and say howdy and stuff. But at the same time, that's the stuff. That's the work right there.
Yeah, you're definitely right on that. I mean, that was one of the root things that Hong and I were thinking about in regards to the podcast was just being able to listen to your other coworkers and kind of find out what other people on campus do, and in hopes of maybe running into that person and just having conversation around some of their likes. And I like the piece of just it happening also organically, like you're saying, like the just with the bowling league or some donuts and some coffee. That's really humanizing the positions, right?
I love the Bucaro Voices for that exact reason. I've been so astonished at, like, the things that I've learned and so impressed. I mean, I'm a big, huge fan of not only the podcast, but of you all individually. I mean, your reputations definitely precede yourself, but for good reason. And that conscientious community building that you do is amazing. Like, I would have never known that Mike Medell's a taquero, or some of the things that that your podcasts have shown me. And yeah, I think that that's, like I say, just one of those things that we can do. With the bowling league, that's not for everybody. We haven't done it for years, but, like, things like that. Security had put together a softball league for a hot minute. That was a blast. Those sorts of connections that don't necessarily have to deal directly with productivity and those tangible outcomes. Sometimes those are the most important.
Yeah. I'm still hoping for a kickball league.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go, hon. Make it happen.
Man, I don't even know. My knees are already aching just thinking about it, but I'll try.
I can smell that big red rubber ball.
Hey, no big bouncies.
So, in terms of segueing to our next section, what brought you to SBCC? We're going to talk about what your path to SBCC. So, Jesse, what brought you here? I know you've had a lot of stops in the college itself. You alluded to earlier, but what was your path like to even come to SBCC in the first place?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I think that that's a natural point of that question is the path within SBCC as well. Getting me here, I had been working in the private sector for a while. I even worked in family businesses, and there's challenges and everything. But when I was working in nonprofit industry before starting with City College, it was really great. I was working up in Santa Maria. They have the Santa Maria Organization of Transportation Helpers, SMOOTH, smooth. And I love the, I was like a smooth program assistant, but I think I would have preferred to have been like an operator, so I could have been called like a smooth operator. But
Yes, that's right.
That's
that
right.
was a grant-funded position, and the grant was sunsetting. And they were really just helpful. They gave me letters of recommendation before, the grant was ever done, so I could start applying. And so the transition was pretty smooth. Felt really fortunate about that. I was able to get in as a senior office assistant, and I began my first position out at the Wake campus. And at that point, We had several different directors that were over different portions at that point, what was called continuing ed. And almost as soon as I began, there was a lot of upheaval and things were changing. We were having previous president on the way out. Jack Friedlander was stepping in as a temporary president, and they were already talking about sort of decommissioning continuing ed and making it all fee-based. And there was a lot of confusion and a lot of challenge in around that. And my first thought was, I've just begun and I'm already going to lose my job first in, last in, first out. But fortunately, that was my first involuntary transfer. They found a position over in community services, administrative services on the main campus for a senior office assistant. And so what was looking like a, I don't know what sort of future suddenly became a, well, if you want a job, you're going to work over here on this campus now. I was like, okay, no problem. Thank you very much. I'll work across the street from the beach. And that was an interesting fit as well. We had a lot of different responsibilities coming under the same umbrella. But what essentially turned out to be more of a special events coordinator position. And in fact, so I was in that position for 7 years. And I like to say the truth of the matter, but I also like to say it. In those 7 years, I was caught up twice. It's not a really a position to be caught up with, but like at the same time, like I was busting my butt trying to like do my best, but yet it was just untenable to ever really be caught up. Unfortunately, that was what made the pill extra bitter to try to swallow when my second involuntary transfer came up and they said that your position isn't full time. It's only three quarter time. And I'm like, it feels really full time. I had been working with human resources because they were trying to figure out who to put me with. My director at the time had taken another position, and like I was reporting to the VP of H or a VP of BS at that time. And so there was just some, it didn't really make sense in an organizational chart sense. Where does Jesse report to? And so they were trying to find a home for me. And exactly the first time that I really got to know Yuhong a little bit was they were trying to put me in the Office of Communications. And that made a lot of sense, with advertising events and just, that campus culture perspective. So I had been working with human resources on building a job description that accurately described what I did. But before that could happen, I got my second involuntary transfer, as we talked about, and landed up in purchasing. And I got to say, it was a, again, bitter pill to swallow, but it wasn't too bitter for too long because then the COVID pandemic happened. And all of a sudden it was like, well, what a time not to be in special events when there are no events that are special. or rather, everything's so special that you're not doing it. So it was a heck of a ride to get there, but I like I said, I've been super excited to work in this position with this team. That is something I had been missing. I mean, especially during those years when they were trying to find a home for me, like who does this guy should this guy report to? It made it feel really good. Like I want to give my best for the person that I'm supporting, and I didn't even really know who that person was. And, I wanted to have respect and feel respect from the person I was supporting, and that had been lacking for a long time. And so now that's not something I feel like. When I say about my transition out of Santa Barbara City College, I just want to be really clear that, like, it is not because I'm in a bad position now. I feel as a department, we've been so fortunate to finally get the buying power, the purchaser, the buyer into our department. And then working with the individuals on the team that we do, it's, I mean, not only has Rui, very conscientiously built and fostered a team camaraderie, it's the individuals on our team. Like we've seen some folks that came from other departments, kind of like myself. Maybe they didn't find it really great where they were before, but in this new entity, the purchasing department, it really has allowed a lot of us to thrive. And that's actually, my next stepping stone is because of that same sort of thing. Had some unlooked for, unrequested on the job training, and that prepared me to be able to start applying for purchasing positions elsewhere. And so, fortunately, I'll be starting at another college in another state in another purchasing department. So, but looking very much forward to that. But I'm also, like a lot of folks have said to me when they hear my news of taking off, is that bittersweet. It's bittersweet for me too. Not only the current environment. I've got a boss that I respect and respects me, allows me a lot of that flexible work schedule that works best for my life, has a great team and all those things. But some of the work that we've been working on, the embodied social justice group that has been started by individuals on campus, where, like Kindred was always, Dr. Kindred Murillo was always famous for saying, let's president proof this. Like, this is for us by us. That I love that sort of thing where it's not waiting on somebody up above to say, all right, this is now a group and it shall function in this way, but rather this is a group we need. Let's build this. Let's make it work for us. And so a lot of those communities, the restorative justice community and the circles that we've been sitting in there and the trainings that we've been involved with, I have a lot of respect and appreciation for those opportunities. And I'm going to be sad not to be a part of them going forward at City College, because I believe in them and I feel encouraged by what I've been seeing coming about, and the people that have been involved with them and the passion and the talent that have been involved with creating those spaces, and maybe moving forward towards what Jordan was saying on the previous Book of Our Voices podcast, some of that healing to be able to really envision a new future and an improved campus culture.
Well said, well said. And your touch, it extends beyond even the campus culture in the community. I know how you roll. You're a DJ on KCSB. You were doing the color commentary at the Brawlin' Betty's match last weekend. So just you leaving, you will be dearly missed on this campus and in this community. You're
Absolutely.
man of the people, and we appreciate you, and you'll be missed. But we're happy for you as well, because you wouldn't be leaving unless it was something that you felt was a net positive for you and you and yours. So we're happy for your opportunities. And hey, all those opportunities for, embodied social justice, restorative justice, all those things, you're going to another campus. So you'll get a lay of the land and you'll get to see what's going on there as well. So I'm sure your voice will be much appreciated over there as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll get the lay of the land and then start being a squeaky wheel.
That's how it goes. If you squeak before you know what's up, then people will call you on that. Then your voice loses a little bit of that. So yeah, it's always important to get a feel for things. But you're so in tune with those kind of things that I have no doubt that you'll get in where you fit in. You'll be great over there. So
I'm excited that they do have a radio station over there. I'm definitely going to get my feet on the ground before I sign up for anything like that. But it's been a really the two communities that you kind of mentioned here, the big one that we're talking about, Santa Barbara City College, and then my tenure over at KCSB. I'm just wrapping up now on 11 years over there. I've been with City College about coming up on 13. I had a few chaotic times in my life. I used to live in Lompoc. I used to be married to another woman and have a whole future and a house that I thought, I was going to live in for, my golden years and all that stuff. And then the rug got yanked out from under that, and lots of different changes over the years. But some of the relationships and the outlets of creativity and purposefulness that both KCSB and SBCC have offered me have allowed me to survive and then allowed me to thrive. Like, some of the relationships from both of those were the couches that got opened to me when I was on the couch circuit, and it's amazing the different ways that I'm just a DJ. I'm just spinning some of the records. It's very egotistical if you think about it. Like, hey, you should listen to the music that I like. That's kind of what a DJ is doing. But at the same time, like, all the listener relationships, all the DJ interrelationships, it's provided me not only stability, but joy throughout that whole tumultuous times. It's certainly been a real blessing on my end.
Yeah, that's one of the things about DJing that people, it's not necessarily about having people listen to stuff that you like. It's really about the playlist and trying to get that. The segues and the musical flow, and then if you could do it in a crowd and the people rock with it, that's just a bonus on top. But for me, it's always been about like kind of the curation and like the mixing in the stuff that I like, but having it in a way that it flows and kind of like vibes, and you can kind of create this groove. I mean, yes, there is an egotistical element to it, but in a lot of ways, a lot of it is just me building it for myself and just putting it out there and hoping someone else likes it. But I can't see how it can kind of lean all the way the other way and just be real, yeah.
Now, that magical word, curation, I didn't appreciate necessarily that element right away. I had to get comfortable behind the microphone. I had to, learn the equipment and stuff like that. But then I realized, like, the real gem of KCSB in this area is that folks take the time to curate their sound in their show. And like, you know, one of the fun things to do is like, hey, you know, we're not always available all the time. Somebody needs to take a vacation or something, and you ask for a substitute DJ, and somebody will like cover your show. And like, man, that's just such a neat thing to do, is like you're kind of doing an homage to their show. Like, this is what Tio Chewy does, and like, I'm gonna do it like Tio Chewy does it. Or like, you know, from my perspective, oh, I'm gonna go cover, you know, Hattie Bell and the Rambler. What does that look like? And you know, try and do justice to how I perceive their show. And it's a really interesting reflection when you listen to somebody cover your show. You're like, wow, is that how you hear me? And that's pretty cool. And curation is like, it's magical. I mean, it's not an algorithm. It's not like, you know, something that you choose out of your musical library. It's something that somebody put together with love for you.
I mean, it is an algorithm, but it's a human algorithm. It comes from the brain, fully analog, you know. And
It reminded me of the mixtapes used to pass in the hallways to the people who were special.
oh yeah.
I made you a mixtape over the weekend.
Oh, and you say, and you save certain ones for that middle breakdown. Oh yeah. And the thing about covering a show, I will say, you can only cover a show once or twice. Because I remember I had to cover a funk show one time, and I'm like, oh yeah, I got a lot of funk records, but I don't have that many, honestly, because it was a 3 hour block. So after about the second hour in, I'm running dry. I'm like, oh man, now I'm starting to see where it's a true art form. If you doing that week in and week out, you've really got to be digging and pulling and like really into like knowing a lot of stuff and where this can segue into that and that segue. Like so it is an algorithm, but it's fun that it's a human algorithm built up with all this knowledge that you've accumulated over the years. And it, I mean, it truly, yeah, love the art of DJing, love the true culture of it. And like, yeah, that aspect will be missed as well, Jesse, because doing a show for 11 years, you know how deep you've had to dig in those crates. So yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah, it's been a joy. A lot of different music that got introduced by just, you know, being a part of the KCSB community, like learning what other people are listening to. But also, they've got an amazing music library, 62 years. I mean, they got a lot of vinyl. It's pretty cool. But getting back to what Akilah is saying, mixtapes, man, that is definitely the lost art. And people are like, you know, books on tape. No, you mean like an audiobook? Like, no, I mean tape. You know, that sort of thing. I don't know. Not a lot of people will see my handwriting anymore because we're all typing on these keyboards and stuff. But my handwriting is specifically based on a Van Halen mixtape that I got, you know, when I was in like, I don't know, somewhere 8th or 9th grade or something like that. I conscientiously said, I want to write like that. And so, yeah, it's all that person's fault, whomever gave me that Van Halen mixtape.
And cassette writing tracks on cassettes, there was not enough room. If you fit a lot of tracks on there, you had to write super small to fit all the track. If you were actually doing a track listing, I just stopped that probably to just listen to this. I can't even tell you what's on here, and you ask me, I'll tell you, but I'm not gonna write it down because my writing is atrocious anyways.
I remember my hand shaking, when you, because you're like, you wanted it to be all, you didn't want to misspell anything. You wanted it to be all nice because you're about to give it to somebody who you
Oh.
cared about, like all of that.
And I'm a lefty, so like the tape covers were glossy. So when I'd write, I'd smear my own writing with my
Writing.
freaking hand. Oh man, it was a nightmare.
Oh,
The
you got to
mix
get the
CD
right
helped. The mix
pen
CD
too.
helped, but yeah, it was still not perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you for that trip down memory lane, and again, you will be missed. But on that note, we are segueing, Jesse. Good eating, a dish or a restaurant, anything you want to talk about food related, recently or throughout your life. If you want to kick us off, go
Right
for it.
on, right on. Oh, I'm a definite foodie, but I'm kind of a recovering foodie in the sense of I used to, in another life or whatever, spend probably far too much money on food, and now I'm unabashedly a grocery outlet fan. Like I love that whole like opportunistic thing. Sometimes, especially when I was fresh out of doors from the first marriage, was like, oh man, what am I gonna create? And at that time in Santa Barbara, for a short while, they built the store, they ran it for a couple of years, and then they bounced. But Fresh and Easy was in town,
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
and Fresh and Easy had that like clearance section, and I'd be like, I'd play Fresh and Easy roulette, and it's like very few times did I ever get nothing, get skunked. But yeah, I go over there and find, you know, what they have, and then start creating something, and just, you know, try to keep it budget style, because, you know, I was paying that like family rent up in Lompoc, and then all of a sudden it's like I'm paying full bore rent down here in Santa Barbara, and it's like, wait, how do people eat and like, you know, get paid once a month? And like, oh man, what's that look like? So Fresh and Easy Roulette then became Grocery Outlet, you know. But I love me some pierogies. There for a while, like it was kind of funny. Speaking of Grocery Outlet, they had these sort of off-brand pierogies, but they were super cheap, and I was like, man, well, I'm gonna spice them up the way that I want them anyway. All I really need is this. And so I was getting those for a while, but I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and I grew up with like homemade pierogies, and like, you know, the good ones have sauerkraut in them, or I mean, there's all sorts of good ones, but the ones that I like the best had sauerkraut in them. And no matter how many different stores I went to, I could never find anything like that. So at one point in my life, I'm like, all right, it is the I learned to make pierogies part of my life, but that's kind of a major operation. And so I ended up getting a couple of friends together, and we had this little big pierogi party. Yeah, it was, they were a love, but you get them in your freezer for a long time, and that was good. But do you guys know what a pierogi is?
Oh yeah. My wife had a friend whose grandmother was Polish. And so she would invite us over for dinner every now and then, once in a blue moon, but it was like such a treat because she would do this giant like oven roasted pork knuckle thing, and she would also have pierogies as well. And it was that was some good eating, I'm telling you. So yeah, you're hitting a sweet spot right there, because I remember, just because it was something where I grew up with pot stickers and dumplings and stuff like that. But the pierogi is different enough, and the seasoning, you're right, the seasoning gives it a different enough flavor that it was totally fresh and unique when I was eating it, because I was like, oh yeah, I understand this just looking at it. But the flavor is so different. It is a uniquely kind of, European kind of that
Being.
kind of flavoring. So it gives it a totally fresh spin on it, and they were always so good. And it was the same thing as a dumpling pot sticker, where in terms of a quick meal in a pinch, and at the end of the day, you make it as complex or as simple as you want, because at the end of the day, it's just rolled out dough that you cut into little pieces and fill. So you can fill with any, I mean, the basic one is just fill with a little bit of potato or
Potatoes.
just simple things, or you can make it as ornate as you want. You can add ground beef if you have access to that, or you can add, so it's a classic food of the people. It's a great choice.
I
Yeah.
love that connection you said about the dumplings pot stickers. Like I've really thought about that before. It's like, wow, it's kind of like an empanada. It's kind of like a tortelli or a ravioli. Like these are like something that we can all agree on. But yeah, I'm interested. Our colleague Amity in human resources has a pierogi special that I have yet to enjoy. But I think she goes more of like a sweet rather than a savory.
Oh,
Right? Yeah. So there's all
interesting.
sorts of different ways that you could make it.
That's the classic argument, just like grits, they're sweet or savory. That's
That.
about to that that's always a raging debate.
But why we got to choose? Like, why can't it be
Do
both?
both.
Depends
Yeah.
on the day. Absolutely.
But you know,
Absolutely.
there's people out here, purists, so they're like, no, don't put any sugar in my grits, or whatever the case may be. But also, here's something to put on your guys' plate. There's also an Afghan dish, one of my favorite Afghan dishes. It's called mantoon, and it's kind of like along that same similar lines of the pierogi too, where it's like the pinch, and you can stuff it with different things. But yeah, if you're ever in a spot where you're in a trying to order something from an Afghan restaurant, it's definitely worth trying it. It's one of my first memories of eating Afghan food.
Oh man, mantoon. I'm gonna check that out. You know, I
Yeah.
learned something listening to this podcast. Now I'm learning being on it. That's cool.
And they're
Yeah.
doing like sometimes with like a kind of like a tomatoey sauce around
It,
it and
yeah.
stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. And that,
Yep.
oh, it's
And
that another little spin, just a little tweaks the flavor, completely change the dish, give it that regional specificity. And that's what makes things like that. Like, yeah,
but the
you just, there's familiar aspects to everybody, but those unique elements are what tie to a place. And that's what really makes it like, oh, yeah, there we go. So,
put a little bit of yogurt, and then they throw some dry mint on the top.
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you guys mind if I geek out on that regional specificity for just a minute?
Knock yourself out,
No,
man. That's what we're here for.
now
Exactly.
I've this is not interesting to maybe anybody but myself, but I'm curious about like what constitutes a pig in a blanket where you're from.
See, I someone totally out of the game, it just like learning about it, trying to make it, I think of it like a sausage and like a pancake, something like that, like a
Sausage and
breakfast
pig.
thing. Yeah.
How about you, Akil?
My first would be hot dogs and croissant. That's how I remember like pigs in a blanket. Like the Pillsbury's croissant my mom used to make when it, when I was
Ooh,
growing
oh
up.
man, roll a hot dog in there.
They put a hot dog in. Yeah, that's what I thought pigs in the blankets
Yeah.
were.
Yeah. No. It feels like that's sort of similar to what I understand, like most of the Californian ones that I hear about. They're like, oh yeah, it was like one of those little cocktail weenies in a crescent roll. They didn't even say croissant, like it's crescent roll. And I was like, okay. But my world was kind of really messed up because I was only 10 when I moved away from Pennsylvania, but it's very, very different in Pennsylvania. And I moved to Colorado. And they're like, it's like a hot dog sticking out of a drop biscuit. And I'm like, what is that? Like
Oh,
that's not a pig in a
but
blanket.
that sounds really good too. As someone who loves, I love biscuit sandwiches, and biscuits are like, that's probably my favorite. Because with that batter, you can make pancakes, you can make waffles, you can make biscuits. I think the biscuit is my favorite of the three. I love a good pancake, but the biscuit is like the most consistent in terms of, I've had really good pancakes, but with the same batter, I've had really bad pancakes. But I ain't never seen anyone mess up a biscuit. Like
Oh
you could
no, come on.
burn.
You never had a ricochet biscuit?
Well, okay, I don't even know what a ricochet. Now you gotta let me know what a ricochet biscuit is. Is it so hard that you can throw it off the wall and it bounces, or?
That's right. That's right.
But
Like
then
the
you could
Blues
just
Brothers.
crack it like, oh, that's right, the blue. That's right. Never mind. But you
If
could
it don't
crack
bounce
it like
back,
an
you go
Oreo.
hungry, Bow Bow Bow.
Crack it like an Oreo. The inside's gonna be still moist. So yeah.
Oh, that's true. No, but in Pennsylvania, I've heard different folks compare it to like a halupki, but it's basically like rice and ground meat. You would think that it'd be like ground pork, but it's usually ground beef in our house, mixed with seasonings and then like wrapped in cabbage leaves and then slow cooked in a tomato like all day. And oh my God, yeah, like I still make those every now and again. It's this next level. It's just some people call it stuffed cabbage or halupkis, but like. Yeah, that was a pig in a blanket in my neck of the woods. And yeah, it's just always like that regional specificity of like, what people call like beefaroni or chili mac or, like all we all have different names for like essentially the same thing, but it's interesting to me.
Chili in Colorado, New Mexico versus chili in Texas versus chili, so yeah.
Oh yeah, well I remember definitely a few barbecue conversations on previous Vaquero Voices contest or podcasts, but yeah, the regional specificity of barbecue is something else too.
Yeah.
All right, so real quick, bringing it back to Grocery Outlet, because my wife recently just converted as well, and she goes there every weekend now as part of her shopping routine. For the students out there that might be wanting a meal on a budget, if you had go to Grocery Outlet chop style, you have like $20 to spend, what would you advise in terms of purchase and preparation? What are you buying and what are you making with it?
For some reason, recently I have become a full-on cereal addict. I mean, like,
Oh, cereal's
I used to
the
like cereal, like with Saturday morning cartoons and stuff like that, and that was about it, But then at some point, I like started putting peanut butter and fruit in it, and like, so they got like the cheapest, like almond milks and stuff like that around. Like, I can't afford to be an almond milk as much cereal as I eat. Like, so Grocery Outlets keeps me like that. They also, as much as I love and will miss living or close by, walking distance to a Trader Joe's, I can't get with Trader Joe's tortilla chips. They're not my bag. But Grocery Outlet's got the greasy ones, they got the crispy ones, they got lots of different chips. And those ones are kind of like things that are always there, which is like kind of nice. That and ice cream, like you'll be spending like $7 or $8 for like a pint of ice cream elsewhere, and like you can get it there for $1.99. I'm like, all right, I can work with that. But yeah, honestly, another one of those things I remember Jordan was talking about during the pandemic and everybody going sourdough bread. Yeah, we still make sourdough in my family too. All of a sudden, all the like the spaghetti sauces and stuff were disappearing off the shelves. And the only thing left was paste. And I'm like, well, I should be cooking with paste anyway. And so like that became a thing. Like I started buying tomato paste and making my red sauces out of that. And man, you really like it's a super cheap thing that you can do. You can make it into pizza sauce, you can make and then there's that sourdough again. It's like, oh, I got a pizza crust already. I made it with Clyde is my sourdough starter's name. You got to have a name for your sourdough starter. I had like several different iterations of the sourdough starter, and when it got to be the fourth, in honor of our previous colleague Clyde Lee Nelson the fourth, it had to be Clyde. Yeah.
That's exactly who I thought about once you said it.
So yeah, Clyde, busts out the pizza dough, and then you got your cheap can of sauce, and you got yourself a pizza, and it's so good because it's like you put all the things on it you want, and none of the things you don't. Yeah, it's kind of spoiled me. I haven't gone out to pizza in a long time, and when I do, I'm kind of like, yeah, just I want pepperoni because I want all the grease because I don't really get all the grease on my homemade pizzas. But yeah, I'd say that's a one. But that's the thing about Grocery Outlet. It's like you can go with a list and Grocery Outlet just laughs at you. Like you're just you're going there to see what they have.
It's
And
what they have. Yeah, exactly.
I kind of compare it to like Ross, but for food. They got good stuff, but you don't know what you're gonna get.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm a firm believer. It's sometimes it's innate to human beings. It's about the hunt. I think sometimes, when you're into a certain thing, the hunt makes it like that much more rewarding. I remember when the pandemic hit and kind of got into thrifting a bit for like home decor and stuff and Facebook Marketplace. And then sometimes I'm like, it's just really about the hunt, really trying to seek it out, find it at a cheaper price. And sometimes you can haggle. To me, man, that's good living.
I had to come to that the roundabout way. Like I was much more of a buyer. I want in and out. And then you're exactly right. Like when it came to Grocery Outlet, I was like, I'm gonna take my time. I'm gonna enjoy this experience. My wife and
Right?
I, we have literally gone there as like date night because that we're that old. We're like, let's go to Grocery Outlet. But the thing that I really can relate to, you said thrifting, is like, I'm a vinylophile. I'm a DJ, but like. Buying records at full price? Oh no, ain't nobody got enough money for that. So I was like, let's go to the thrift. And then it's absolutely like, all right, I don't need any more Carpenters or Tennessee or any Ford. Where's the good stuff? Like, it's the thrill of the hunt. And like, I don't want to go shopping at all, but I'll go record shopping for hours. And yeah, and it's usually because I've gone to like two different thrift stores. And yeah, along those lines, that's another thing that's interested me is that like, we've got several different. There's a bunch of different Alpha thrifts in town. There's the Catholic Charities, and then there's this one over by like the Ralph's and the barbecue joint out there in Nolita. And they I individually price their records. And it's just astonishing. Like most of the time, it's like 50 cents, or here in Santa Barbara, it's like $2 for a record or something like that. But you go there and it's like $1.88 or something like that. I'm like, what makes you think that? Like, I don't know. It's just interesting to me. But yeah, I do like the thrill of the hunt when it comes to grocery deals and records.
Well, we all three of us have to get together and just do like a record vinyl crawl, because I'm just recently got into vinyl. I grew up on vinyl because my parents and stuff, but recently kind of just circled back to it, and like the addiction is real. So I mean, we gotta plan to do something like that. There's some shops down in Ventura and as well as in Santa
And
Barbara. Before you
even
leave, Jesse.
Warbler, yeah, Warbler, you can get in there on because they have the bottom row is like a lot of their cheap bins, and you get a lot of decent stuff for pretty cheap over there.
Oh yeah, I love me some Warbler. They got that section called Cheap Jazz Exotica. I'm like, that's me. That's exactly what. Oh, and, but Ventura, you got Grady's, you got Salzer's. That's some good stuff right there.
I stay in Salzer's.
Yeah, Salzer's is such a like a that's an institution. I don't know what the Salzer's video was ever like before that went up, but yeah, Salzer's the self. It's like, man, it's like part head shop, part record store, and like, yeah, it's just a full day's entertainment going there too.
And he's got the bona fide designing all those old concert posters for the bowl and stuff. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Wow. Thank you for that. That was good eating right there. From pierogies to Grocery Outlet to digging in the crates.
Licorice
Yeah,
pizza.
you can't beat that. Can't beat that. All right. Should we go Akio or should we just go to higher learning? What are you
I think we
thinking?
should just go straight to higher learning.
Yeah, because I think riffing off Jesse is just the way to go. I feel I agree. So it's all right, Jesse, kick us off again. Higher learning, piece of culture, anything, book, music, movie, food. I mean, not food, but book, music, movie, TV, game, anything you got. Let's do it. Let's riff.
I'm now a convert. I like physical media. I really like records. I like the smell of them. I like looking at the old liner notes and like things that are inappropriate now. And like, I like the time capsule element, and I literally like the smell of old records. And the same thing goes for me for books. Like, I really like holding the book, but I recently enjoyed The Covenant of Water, and I was like, man, I could have used that on my Kindle. Because that thing was like, I was like going to knock myself out if I fell asleep reading that thing. It was heavy. It was just a tome. So recently I got into a Kindle, And that, I saw my wife having one, and she's like, we're going on these bike packing adventures. We're in the middle of the woods, and she busts it out, and she can read in the dark, and she's got like 18 books on there, and I'm like, got half of a book that I ripped in half because I already read the other one, and I didn't need to carry the extra weight, or something. So it's definitely opened my eyes. But the challenge on that for me is like, sometimes I don't even remember what I'm reading while I'm reading it. I'm reading Margaret Atwood right now, but it was like I had to like go and like go back to the home page a couple of times because it's like, you pick it up and it doesn't like you're not looking at the cover, you're not like thinking about like who you're reading. But yeah, I'm an old white guy. I'm pushing coming up on 50, and all the systems of oppression are aimed at benefiting me. And we've seen a lot of old white guys in print for a really long time. And it's kind of nice to get away from that. I definitely have had a lot of people in my life that have introduced me to great works from people of color, from women. My wife is definitely included, kind of just like they had their time. Let me read somebody else. But then, like along with the rest of the world, during these last few years, there's been a real racial reckoning. And when Patrice Cullors came through City College and gave her talk and was talking about When They Call You a Terrorist, started reading that, and it was like game change. Like I still like my mental chewing gum and just, reading something light and fluffy at the end of the day, my Harry Potter or something like that, but it provided a necessary outlet for me to like be able to dig in and read about, even if I don't feel like I know what the work is, or how do I get involved with the work, or what do I do? I mean, definitely sign up for your local Surge chapter, do whatever you can do, but being able to read and fill your mind so you're not asking the question, folks of color, colleagues of color, friends of color, like you're filling in some of those gaps of knowledge, those areas that you might should have known, but your privilege blinded you to them. So I just really enjoy going through different books. I know our friend up in the foundation, Rachel Johnson, has definitely inspired me on a lot of different books along those lines about getting away from white tropes and just getting into a little bit more substance. And it's always kind of fun to like see. I think I introduced her to Black Cake. And I was just like, oh man, I actually read something before you read it. Like that, I felt like a badge, or something with that. But it's, I think books and the Sun magazine, those have been my real big enjoyments recently. I don't have a television. I still love me some movies. I definitely will watch a movie on the laptop from time to time. I got my old DVDs. I got some Big Lebowski that I watch and all that. But in general, I'm a book guy. Get a chance at the end of the day after doing all the things, and believe you me, there are a lot of things to do these days. At the end of the day, it's like, oh man, what I really would like to do is like curl up in bed and read a book. My wife and I are like reading books next to each other, and like that's heaven right there. But it's kind of nice. Like sometimes it is like watching television. I'm just reading this Margaret Atwood right now. It's really interesting, and it's kind of science fiction, and it's kind of social commentary, but at the same time it's light and easily digestible, and it's something that I like. It allows me to just relax at the end of the day. And then, like I had mentioned, the Sun magazine, a friend of ours gave us a subscription to the Sun magazine, and it's amazing. It's been around for 50 years. There are no ads, and it's all black and white photography, and these amazing pieces. They always have one large interview and like several poetry sections, essayists, excerpts from different things. And it's really topical and yet revolutionary. And every single time, I mean, I can't think of a single one where like I'm reading it, I very frequently on the same page, I am absolutely laughing, like embarrass yourself in public kind of laughing, and then literally crying. I mean, I cry pretty easy anyway, but like, man, it's a really important touchstone. I like to be informed, and I love me some Heather Cox Richardson and her Letters from an American, like just encapsulating the news in a way that's sort of gauged against a historical lens. But there's something about like being that news cycle, rinse and repeat, and like the amnesiac sort of way that it, like there's so many turns of the news cycle that we all either get overwhelmed or just decide to tune out. And there's something about like reading the Sun magazine that just kind of gives me a little bit more hope. Sometimes it's like really tempered with, dang, Like that's tragedy that's happening right now that I'm not experiencing. And so it's definitely not like just sunshine. It's definitely some darks as well. But I think those are some of the things that I've been enjoying. Just a lot of books getting into my Kindle and, you know, seeing what I can get right at my fingertips. I love me that Libby app. You know, you get, you know, 'cause I'm not a big, again, we live in Santa Barbara. I can't be buying books all the time, but if you can borrow it through your Kindle or, you know, borrow it at our local public, I love my East Side Library Annex. It's what really fuels me, helps me to relax at the end of the day, entertains me, and sometimes informs me.
Now, you cannot bring up Harry Potter and not tell us what your house is, because I know you've taken the test.
I
Do
don't know
wait.
that I have taken the test. Oh, are you gonna guess though? Yes, please. What is the sort of out of a
I'm gonna
QI?
ask. I think you are. I'm gonna guess Ravenclaw, either Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff. You're one of those two. But then I don't know, because then your other so many you got so many facets to you though. Because then I would say like you're super outgoing. Then I would be like maybe he's a Gryffindor. But I think your mind is definitely, you're like a researcher. You're like, I'm gonna say Ravenclaw. Final answer.
I don't know. I never did contemplate it. I never took a test, but you know, I when you asked it, Ravenclaw was the one that popped in my head. But that's probably because I think my niece like had switched alliances over the years and landed on Ravenclaw as her final house. But yeah, it's definitely got me some good uncle points knowing some Harry Potter lore.
I'm gonna send you the test, and that's one of the things you have to do before you leave. And you
All
gotta let
right.
us know.
Hey, you know, the exit interview's got these mandatory things. I'm cool with that.
And shout out to Santa Barbara Public Library and the Libby app. You know, the East Side Library is part of the Santa Barbara Public Library system. Checking out all the books you need. Although, yeah, I still have trouble with ebooks and audiobooks. I still like the physical book, but again, for your in those situations where you're camping, you're on a trip, lugging around a bunch of books is very difficult. But yeah. Shout out to Sun Magazine. Just crossed 50 years. I think they started in 1974.
Yeah.
Based out of North Carolina, just a really good, not just a good thing for people to read, but a good outlet for creatives. If you do poetry, if you write, you know, essays and short fiction and things of that sort, they've been taking submissions, you know, in an ad-free format for 50 years. So both in terms of their service to creatives, giving them a place to submit their work, as well as for folks to just read to enjoy it. I mean, shout out to Sun, just 50 years started, you know, just this year. So that's awesome.
And that's they even have like a reader's write, so you know if you want to warm up, you know you can just submit on different topics they cover. You know, this one's about yard sales, and so everybody's got something they can say about yard sales. And yeah, that's great. And East Side Public Library, yeah, I love the folks over there. I think they're getting a facelift. They're going to be doing some construction this year, but that's been super good for me. Like I don't get over to downtown all that time. I like being able to walk over to my local library, have my favorite little librarian over there and all that stuff. I'm certainly a big fan of that. For myself, it didn't always work for me either because I wasn't really a reader growing up. My mom's always saying like, hey, you should read the Chronicles of Narnia, or you know, Lord of the Rings, and I'm like, yeah, nah, I'm good. And then it didn't happen until somewhere, I think it was, I wanted to read, and all I could read were all the things that I had to read for college. And then once I graduated, it was like, I'm going to read what I want to read, and I started becoming a voracious reader, and I was just like, couldn't get enough. So it came to me sort of late, and I think for a long time, I was like, man, I don't know if I can finish a book before I had to return it. And so that was kind of like kept me on the fence. But now, instead of TV or whatever, I'm reading all the time. So it's not an issue there. But along the lines of the convenience of the e-readers, you could just turn off the Wi-Fi, and all of a sudden, you know, you don't have to get it read by the time that it disappears because it's there on your reader. But yeah, it's been a cool thing to be able to change gears. You know, sometimes, like I say, I love the smell and the feel of tactile media. One of my dear friends is Mark Zalezzi, and he was a book buyer and long time. And, you know, he's got a love affair with books that surpasses my own. I think they're like furniture is made out of books, but it's definitely like one of those things where, you know, there's a time and a place for that. And then, you know, sometimes when you're in bed and you got something that you don't have to have the light on. You can just have like your little screen glowing at you, and you'll be able to read. That's pretty cool too.
Don't know if I could live if I didn't have a TV, I'll be honest with you, but Good for you.
Well, I told you, like, there were times, different times in my life. I remember when I went to college and I was like, man, I'm above that. I don't want a television. Like that's, I felt like I was superior. Like, oh,
Yeah.
I don't
Kill
watch the
your
TV.
TV. Kill your TV. Remember that slogan?
That's still on my bicycle. I got my bicycle that I've been riding around for 30 years, and it still has a kill your television on it. Yeah, it was like very elitist of me, and I felt superior or whatever. And then I realized is really I'm just as escapist as anybody. I'm like I just want to, go into a different world than the one I'm living. And that's reading. It's just given this like sort of image of being like intellectually superior or something, but it's not. And then different times, like I shortly after college, then it was like, oh well, I began to appreciate comedy and like how at the end of a rough day or whatever, having a little bit of comedy, a little half hour comedy was like, oh, it makes me feel good. So I kind of like got brought back into the fold with television, so much so that when I separated from my first wife, it was like, man, but what happened on Game of Thrones? Like I didn't know because like all of a sudden I didn't have a TV and yeah, it was life. Well, life was different, but that was another thing. It was like, all right, I'm on the couch circuit. I can't keep up with my television. And then I was like, man, I got to pay rent. I can't afford to, like pay for cable. And yeah, it's been interesting. I had Netflix for a while and loved me some, I don't know what it is. The story is as old as time, like good versus evil, Superman or, super being or whatever. But for some reason, I am a comic geek. Like, I give me all the Marvels. I'll take them. All those like Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and like that was like when I had Netflix and was man. I the more the merrier. But again, I don't know what it is. It's like intellectually, it doesn't seem like it would be that satisfying. Like, yeah, the good guy wins in the end. Like, but yet for some reason, yeah, I'm attracted to it.
But they don't always win, and it never ends because that's how they keep you going, right? Got to keep buying those issues. So,
Yeah, and the good guy isn't always all good.
yep. And then, yeah, because there'll be a plot twist like halfway through to get you to buy more issues. That's why I love the stories that begin and end. Like, I love comics myself, and I was an avid collector when I was young. But then some of the stories, like the Spider-Man, the Superman, those never end. So then I started going to those one shots, the 12-issue miniseries, the 24-issue miniseries. Same with anime. Like the stuff that begins and ends, I really love now. Whereas the stuff that goes for 500 episodes, I ain't got time for. But at the same time, I love it all. I respect it all. But in terms of what's for me, I need that beginning and the end and the, finality of those kind of things.
That's why novellas are superior to soap operas, dude. Because
Because you know they
they
will
all
end.
they're gonna end. They're all gonna
Yeah.
end,
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I will say, if you're looking to watch something that goes for days, but it eventually does end, oh, I don't know. I don't think it's on Netflix anymore. But it's a show, a Turkish show. It's called Artugal, and it's basically the history of Turkey. Really, really good series. But it's wild. There's so many episodes in that. I don't even know how long it took for them to film it. But, and ironically, I was head in, like I was deep in, and I couldn't stop. And so I had the fortune of actually finishing it when I was in Turkey. So that was pretty cool. I was on my phone. I was finishing it. I'm like, it's over. It's over. It's over. But yeah, so if you're looking to indulge yourself, that's definitely something that's worth checking out.
The title again?
Article, I'll send it
Article.
to you. Yeah, it's like the history of Turkey from the Turkish perspective. I'll send it to just we'll get in the show notes.
And then touching on your earliest picks, you mentioned Patrice Cullors, you mentioned The Covenant of Water. I mean, it's one of those things where the ideas, I mean, a lot of older folks, like straight up boomers, let's just say it, a lot of boomers, some of these ideas that are now coming to the forefront and being written about and being, just discussed. I mean, it just wasn't a just wasn't talked about very much back in the day. It was just like kind of hidden, but kind of also just not bubbled up to get published and things of that sort. So I feel like a part of it is a lot of folks just didn't know and they're coming to it late. And then some folks are just straight up deniers where they're like, now they know, like, oh, well, this is what I know from what I know. And they're just, refusing to get their head out of the sand, so to speak. The Covenant of Water is a historical fiction. So there were ways where this stuff was bubbling up. And you mentioned science fiction and fantasy. And that was primarily the way I learned a lot about, certain political concepts and certain political ideas and theories and things of that sort of was when you couch it in a sci-fi veneer, like that, something like Dune or those kind of books where you have these full political systems, you know, Isaac Asimov's Foundation trilogy, you can have these discussions about what's right and what's wrong within these systems without actually using the names of the actual systems and getting yourself in trouble, you know, in terms of the editorial controls of the 40s and 50s and before that even. So it's one of those things where I like that you not only name drop current books that are actually having these conversations full-throated out in the open, which is long overdue. It needs to happen because people need to be seen and represented in kind of the stories and ideas that are being floated today. But then you're also referring to the things of the past where these things were bubbling up before. So it's kind of like a cultural anthropology of the whole idea of, like, you know, science fiction, fantasy, bringing these ideas up, comic books kind of bubbling these ideas up in secret. And then to now, where we can finally have these conversations, and hopefully more people commit to engaging in these conversations and really trying to kind of put themselves in there and see what they really know about themselves and their communities, you know? So yeah, thank you for
Beautifully
all of these
put.
picks.
Beautifully put. No, I mean, who doesn't love Octavia Butler? And you know, just the what you said, it makes a lot of sense. Like, not only the historical and the contemporary connection, but what people are willing to interact with. Like, if it's just entertainment, and then they're suddenly realizing that I didn't think of it that way. And like, you can contextualize it for them and say, yeah, but don't you feel like this way, you know, in reference to this, it is one of those stepping stones that can maybe segue into a more courageous conversation with that uncle, or with, you know, that problematic person, or, you know, something like that, getting a chance to say, like, yeah, but we have this common ground. Like, don't you understand? Like, you know, I really enjoy that notion. I was thinking along those lines. One of the ways that my wife has helped me to understand, like, an interesting concept, you know, we hear about, like, the book bans from ridiculous states and ridiculous, very power hungry and challenged people. But like, it almost makes sense. It's not that, like, I'm approving of that. I'm very much the opposite. But like, I can understand, like, wow, you know, it's because there's this young adult's book, and forgetting the exact title, I think it's This Poison Heart. And it's about this young black woman who's got these extra powers and stuff, and you know, so it's really engaging on, like, a sci-fi fantasy way. But then the police officer in this particular town is more of an information officer because they went through some semblance of defunding the police, and, like, you know, there were that thing, and this the protagonist's parents were two moms, and like things like that, where it was like not only representation but normalization. It was. Isn't this an amazing book? And like, aren't you intrigued? And at the same time, it's not indoctrination, as I think that we, like, hear from the far right wing nuts, but the actual representation of non-white protagonists. And hey, isn't this an intriguing read? And like, seeing yourself in these different roles, and like, whether it's because, you know, you've come from a marginalized identity or community and see yourself represented here, or whether you're like myself, you know, an old white guy, and you're reading this and seeing yourself in there, it's super connective. And I think that normalizing that, hey, let's read a book about this, and it's not, oh, well, yeah, that was weird because it had this. Like, no, it was a fantastic book. Oh yeah, and then it also had those things in there. Like, I think that's part of that, getting it on multiple fronts. Like, we can have those courageous conversations with individuals, and we need to learn how to better do that. I'd like to talk a little bit more about that in a second, but I think, like, the multi-pronged approach is really what's going to help if popular media were really more reflective of the complexity of who we are as individuals and how we interact. Then it wouldn't be so strange to so many boomers or other folks, and like, really coming up with an understanding of, not everybody's like me. Like, I think the courageous conversations bit, tempted to talk about a little bit. We shortly after George Floyd's murder and a racial reckoning hit not only the nation, but our Santa Barbara City College community, we started having folks going through Crossroads anti-racism training. We started getting little pieces of allyship, of people wanting to learn, of people wanting to do something to make things better, not only in our community, but in ourselves and maybe the nation as a whole. You know, that we suddenly, especially for us white folk, was like, oh, Is that what's happening here? Like, I didn't realize that. And all of a sudden, this like urgency or call to action. And within the Santa Barbara City College community, we had like an anti-racism community that was sort of evolving, sort of with some structure and also yet sort of loose. But in that, Justina Buller, who I don't know if you have had on the podcast already, an amazing resource here at City College for her work, not only in her instruction, but specifically in her new role as a faculty resource. I'm not exactly sure of the title, but basically professional development for faculty members, has really taken that role and run with it and opened up a lot of things, like we were talking before with the embodied social justice community, with restorative justice community, and other things, has really been amazing with that. We work together, sort of being chairs of a group that was basically called, that we basically called ourselves Courageous Conversations. And it was like an attempt to get out of our bodies, like when we're having that, sort of the Eiichiro training enlightened a lot of us to that, like when we're in an uncomfortable situation or when we're triggered and our body goes into that sort of fight or flight or freeze sort of situation, how do we regulate our body? How do we get to a place where we can think creatively and not be reactive? And how do we move forward? And sometimes, if somebody says some straight up racist stuff and you're like triggered by that and you don't know exactly how to have a conversation or if you should be having a conversation or how, that'll work. Like, we were really looking to grow our ability as individuals to interact. And of course, I see that being helpful at our community level, at our Santa Barbara City College community level, but as individuals and taking it into our bigger world and our bigger reach, because as much as we would like to think that like it's the administration's job or it's the politician's jobs, it's like, yes, and it is also our job. And like, how do we learn? And especially as a white guy, like I have an in with other white guys, like they're going to listen to me in a different way, or they might, and like, how do I, bring perspectives and things that would be illuminating or elucidative to that, and how do I do that without being preachy, but with an honest sense of curiosity? And so working in that like Courageous Conversations group was really helpful, and we unpacked, Justina brought a lot of resources. One of them was this model of deep canvassing, where we're listening to somebody not with an agenda. I mean, I guess it's still kind of an agenda, but not really an agenda. The agenda is, how do we just share? How do I hear what you are going through? And how do I share what I'm going through? And then maybe, this is the maybe agenda piece, is like, we'll find that, hey, we both want what's best for our kids, or like some sort of common ground, like that, like as humans, we may be way across the board politically or in other ways, but like, what sort of common ground do we have? And if we humanize folks, if we're rehumanizing people that are different than us, and we're able to see a little bit more from their perspective, it allows us to be in that space where we actually can co-create, where we can listen. And so I think that's one of the elements of the work that's been going on here that I'm really excited about, and hopeful that it'll continue in some form or another. It's definitely enriched my life.
Great shout out. Well said. Nice way to wrap the segment. You've done it all, Jesse. You've done it all today. So
Thank you, Jesse.
thank you very much for coming on the show. It was an honor to have you.
Oh, thank you all. Thank you so much for the work that you do in this podcast and with me today, for helping me feel comfortable and welcome. I didn't, like I was telling Hong before we started this, it's like, I don't really know that we need to hear more of this old white guy, but we are all different voices. Like, we all have different experiences. I'm not trying to say that it was all roses for me along the journey here at City College. But yet I'm not also trying to say like, oh, I've had it so hard either, because I know that I haven't, especially even in comparison to my colleagues. But in general, you all made me feel really welcome, and that you wanted to hear some of my perspective, and hopefully it could be edifying to somebody, or at least interesting or something. I mean, I just wanted to talk to my favorite foodies and Hong. I leave the institution knowing that its hot sauce needs and spice needs are in good hands, because you're still here.
Man, I got acid reflux now. It's touch and go with the hot sauce. I hate to say it, I'm getting old too, but
The only two guys I've ever ate lunch with that made the food so hot and continue to eat it while they were sweating are you two. I've never experienced that with anyone else.
I remember people went out to lunch and, whoa, are you all right, bro? Or like, I'm sweating. And I remember our colleague Adrian was just like, oh, you've never had lunch with Jesse before.
Yeah, they definitely hadn't.
My wife actually thought I was having a heart attack one time, and I was like, no, I'm okay. I promise. I promise. And she made me stop eating something. And I was like, I was sad, but I listened because she was getting legit anxious and worried about my health. So, but.
The only time I had a legit worry about my health with hot things was I was in Spain, of all places, eating sushi, and I had this tradition that, like, yeah, I mean, Spain for sushi, but hey, you're right
Yeah.
next to the ocean. It was fresh. I'm like,
True.
cool. But there was the silly tradition that I had of like putting all the leftover wasabi onto the last piece. It was the wasabi bomber. And I thought like my heart might stop. Like I was like, all right, no more wasabi bombers for me. But like, it wasn't even necessarily enjoyable. I do love me some wasabi, but like, yeah, like I was kind of worried that I might have caused myself actual like
Nasal damage,
schism.
because that wasabi spice is different. Yeah.
Oh yeah,
Nasal,
for sure.
he's a nasal damage.
But that's the thing is I'm a big guy. I just sweat normally. So that's what people gotta know with me. Jesse's different, but me, I'm a big guy. I probably sweat when I eat non-spicy food just because I'm eating a lot. So people need to understand, people need to give me some context. Let me grade me on a curve here. If I'm sweating, that's normal. Only be worried about me if I'm like hyperventilating or panting heavy. But if I'm just sweating, that's just like a Tuesday for me. So you got to give me some credit here.
Man, I can't believe you're leaving the team though. You're getting the acid reflux and stuff. That's not
Oh,
right.
I'll still dip it, but I gotta time it now. Like if I'm like a Mogwai, like if it's past 8 o'clock, I'm not trying to eat no crazy spice. But lunchtime, I'll let it rip. I got time to recover if it's lunchtime or mid-afternoon even. So, but yeah. But yes, again, Jesse, your perspective, I mean, as one of the many billions on this planet, we by definition, literally, we all have our own unique individual perspectives. But we all have unifying aspects. That's what makes a community, the communal aspects of our perspective. So it's important for you to share that perspective. And it was a treat. It was just great. Lovely to have you. And it was an honor. So we thank you
Yeah.
so much. Any final words, parting words, shout outs before we take off for today?
I love you both very much. I'm super thankful to have been in your orbits, and I'm very proud of you and what you're doing, not only here but in your jobs. And yeah, I'm just very thankful to have shared some times, and I'm hoping to share some Jonesies with you.
Shortly, yes.
Certainly.
So yes, until then, until next time, folks, thank you again, Akil, as always.
Yeah, thank you, hon.
And
Thank you, Jesse.
until next time, y'all, this is Vaquero Voices. Take care.
Peace.